Welcome to the Not Sorry Art Podcast. I'm Sari Shrike, the artist and creator behind Not Sorry Art. I'm so excited to talk art and creativity with you, so grab a drink, grab a snack, and let's dive in. Are you looking to gain confidence in your painting practice and improve your sense of color, composition, drawing? At Not Sorry Art School, I teach representational painting techniques that'll help you feel more in control of your art and elevate your abilities. With 16 courses from color theories to master studies, painting water, portrait painting, and our latest edition, painting fabric, you'll have everything you need to master representational painting. With access to current and future courses, a supportive community, and personalized feedback, you'll be well on your way to achieving your artistic goals. Lifetime students get full access to all of this, but if you're not ready to commit yet, try our free 7-day boot camp. This is a great way to experience a bite-sized version of what our full course has to offer. To become a lifetime student or check out the 7-day boot camp, make sure to click the link in the show notes. Hey y'all, welcome back to the Not Sorry Art Podcast. I'm Sari. Thanks for being here. Today we are talking about what we can learn from Dochi. If you're not familiar, Dochi is an upcoming artist, rapper, and musician who I've known about through TikTok, admittedly. For a while, I really liked her work. I also have a couple friends who really adore her. And anytime my friends like someone, I always put in the extra effort. You know, maybe I'm a sheep for that one. But anyways, all this to say, I've really been loving her work. But what made me adore Dochi was some recent interviews that she had, specifically about the nature of creativity and making art in our current landscape. She talks about social media. She talks about the pressure to produce and all of the things that she was talking about in these interviews, and I of course will link them because if nothing else, even if you exit out of this podcast, go listen to the interview. It's so good. But I wanted to synthesize through my eyes the biggest takeaways from her work. And I will also include the TikTok that inspired this. There was a TikToker who made a great breakdown and synopsis over Dochi. And they started out by mentioning that Dochi years ago, you know, when she was just starting to gain some traction and success, had a video series on YouTube where she was quietly working through The Artist's Way. So if you don't know, The Artist's Way is a book and it's dedicated to sort of battling your inner creative demons about the merits of just showing up and making art for yourself. And it's great. I haven't worked through it myself, although I have flipped through the workbook. I'm familiar with it. I will say, as many shortcomings as I have, and I do have many, I tackled this like head on very early in my career. And so I'm interested in it as someone who teaches and talks about creativity, but it is never, this sounds like such a brag. I haven't needed it, but I've had lots of other, believe me, I've read lots of other motivational books in different capacities. But all this to say, The Artist's Way is sort of a self-guided, like you work on a different theme, and Dochi worked on these, posted them online. And in this recent interview, specifically with Rolling Stone, she talks a little bit about her creative mantras. So in this episode, I am going to basically talk you through the things that we can learn from Dochi when it comes to creativity. I'm going to walk you through the highlights of this interview in my personal opinion, and hopefully you walk away from this feeling inspired. You go watch the entire interview because it is charming, of course, and that you can start your 2025 with a little extra skip in your step. So one of the first things that Dochi talks about in this interview is she says that I will not be creatively codependent on, and she says her label, and I would say perhaps your audience, you know, depending on what particular model you're using as an artist. You know, if you're working with a gallery, so I suppose you could swap that out and say you're a gallerist. But if you're like me and a lot of other artists, you know, you are dependent on your audience, on your social medias. Maybe even you could say your algorithm. And the important thing that Dochi is saying here is the importance of not letting what people will think about it, even if they're well-meaning people, even if they're important to your creative process, like a label, like an audience, like a gallery, that so much of your creative making has to be focused around you and what you think. So, you know, codependent, I know a lot of people can roll their eyes because it's a lot of, what is it, psychology talk has found its way into our, you know, everyday lexicon. But I remember many, many years ago when the very beginning of my relationship, I did a stint in couples counseling. You know, what millennial hasn't? And one of the things we learned about is codependency. And the idea was explained to me like this, right? You have two people who come together, and instead of two people who, you know, stand relatively on their own two feet, and, you know, you come together to form a life, that instead you can't function without the constant sort of emotional input from the other person. This is a very layman's definition. I cannot tell you how unqualified I am to talk about psychology. But the way I always understood this is, of course, you know, it doesn't mean that you don't depend on the other person to some extent, right? Like, my partner and I have children, we depend on each other. But it's more that your ability to make something good, important, honest, authentic, whatever, insert your adjective here, shouldn't depend on the input from the other person. That you should make it and then present it to the other person. That you can still sort of have a dependency, but your ability to create shouldn't answer to that. Okay, the next thing we can learn from Dochi is about formula. And in the interview, she says, prioritize what feels good over formula. And here's my more practical, tangible spin on it. First, I definitely agree. I think formulas are formulas for a reason, right? Sometimes they make sense. When it comes to art making and then how to market that and share it, right? There are hundreds, if not thousands, of decisions that go into sharing a body of work, right? And my thing is, listen to your gut. Where you feel like you have a strong opinion on it, don't worry about the formulas in those areas. But where you're kind of indifferent and you're like, I don't know. I don't know what the best time of day to post is. I don't know what the best way to roll out a collection launch is or whatever. Then go and find a formula. And you might find a formula, do a formula, and then realize you don't like the formula. That's fine. But I think the importance is, you know, a formula shouldn't feel like it's a trap, right? The nature of creativity in and of itself is to constantly be playing with formula, trying it out, right? You know, if you look at the evolution of music, like, there was a time when there wasn't like a backbeat, right? You know, classical music had its own percussive qualities, but it didn't sort of have the thing that to me feels like maybe the most vital part of music is sort of the bass and the drums. And, you know, all music is different. But what I'm saying is, what felt like a formula for centuries changed when there was an introduction to a new sound and a new type of making music. And now we're living in a, you know, four on the floor type era where, like, you know, that's more of the formula these days, especially when it comes to pop. But a formula is helpful when you're indifferent, right? And when you do have a passion and a desire to break that formula, listen to that. And I couldn't agree more. Another thing we can learn from Dochi is to buck the idea that I am too much or I am too intense and that other people won't be able to understand what you're going through. And what I thought about this and what I thought was particularly great about the way Dochi sort of approached this is, you know, the things that are most vulnerable, that feel too intense or too over the top or too dramatic or, you know, it's too deep, right? Often those are the things that need to be said the most because no one else is saying them. It kind of gets back to the whole formula thing. You know, you will be able to stand out, but it requires a little bit of that vulnerability. And I don't mean share what you're not willing and ready to share if you are not emotionally in a space where you feel comfortable sharing that. Of course, I would never, hopefully made it clear that I would never advocate for that your safety comes first, right? But assuming that you can share, you know, you want to share, but you're worried because no one else is making art that looks like that or that feels like that, and just everything about it feels too intense, too over the top for you. The thing is that, and she talks about this in the interview, that other people are likely going through it too. You know, sometimes we can make the mistakes as artists that what we're going through is unique. And I think that comes with the temperament of being an artist a little bit, is like, you kind of can develop a narrative about your life that is so singular and you're going through it. And I think artists are typically a little wired kind of different. And so it can feel like that, right? You know, your immediate family and like your community maybe doesn't fully get you, whatever, right? But the thing with especially sharing art online or sharing with a large group of people potentially is that all the things we go through, no matter how unique it feels, there are threads, there's emotions, there's conflict that we can all sort of relate to, right? I've shared a lot about my childhood below the poverty line. That always feels really vulnerable. It's vulnerable because it's always a little bit of a downer. It's vulnerable because we live in a classist society, and even after you've grown out of it and you make an okay lifestyle for yourself, you know, you do still carry around the stigma of like, well, you grew up with, you know, you weren't raised right, right? There is some of that carries with you. But I think in pushing yourself to sort of defy those things and show up anyway, like people who even haven't gone through that directly can still relate to themes of struggling with your identity and finding who you are and overcoming circumstances. You know, we all experience those things. Doshi also talks about the power of fuck it. And I love this, you know, this idea that you may not know exactly why you should or should not do something. I also could chalk this up to the power of trust your gut and kind of being willing to take a little bit of a risk or a gamble. And this advice, you know, it's always easy to make this from the comfort of like, you know, my studio and like I'm not about to post something, right? It can get comfortable. And like, you know, when you're about to post something or make something really scary, I think that's the time when you should sort of enact this screw it mentality. I'm just going to do it anyway, even if I don't have everything figured out. And it reminds me, you know, over the podcast break, you know, I read a Sally Rooney book, the book specifically Beautiful World, Where Are You? It was a great book. You know, just personal. I love reading a good audio book. When I'm painting, I usually do nonfiction, but I was enjoying that book. Anyways, all this to say, there was one quote in chapter 19 that stood out to me, and it was, you know, in this longer paragraph, but she starts and she says, "And we hate people for making mistakes so much more than we love them for doing good. That the easiest way to live is to do nothing, to say nothing, and love no one." And I remember this really, struck me because I often really wrestle with the idea that art requires bravery. I think it's because in a lot of ways, you know, I grew up lower class, blue collar, and, you know, I was around people who were doing the hard job, the factory jobs in an air conditioned warehouse and, you know, the agricultural work and the janitorial stuff and the hard labor, and all the young men in my life went and served in the military. And I have a tendency to really kind of not give myself the credit that anything I do is brave because my hands are soft and I work for a lot of times out of like my activewear, you know what I mean? Like, I just don't think I sometimes, and I think a lot of that also has to do with like, I made my way through college on a running scholarship and there was a lot of pushing myself in my senior year, even to the point where I was running on a stress fracture and just pushing through. And so the act of sort of making a piece of art and then sharing it, I can really psych myself out of how difficult it is. And I had this moment where I was like, well, why does this quote like make me want to cry? I'm really emotional, I'll just say that. And it took me a second to realize there is a lot of scariness in being authentic and raw. You know, one of the things I looked up, I think for a podcast episode last year, was the creativity crisis in Japan. And I will say that I don't think this is unique to Japan per se. I think this is something that's happening across the developed world. But there are some distinct cultural things that have made this manifest in Japan. And this is they write about this as a self-proclaimed, this is not the West coming in and sort of putting its narrative, that they are saying that they have a creativity crisis. And it's because so far that they say, this is again me reading articles, that, you know, there's a real risk of socially standing out, and that is one of the reasons. There's also other economic reasons too, but one of the reasons that they're having this crisis is because the social risk of taking a risk. Does that make sense? The social risk of like standing out, trying something new, going against the grain, no matter how small, is too great that in a lot of ways people don't take that risk, you know. And obviously not entirely, it's not a monolith. There are exceptions. Maybe the way creativity is showing up is just changing. Who knows? I'm not hanging my hat on this fact, but rather to say that it was profound that in a lot of these different articles, social risk of standing out and the risk of, you're shooting for something great, obviously. You're shooting for impact. You're shooting for connection when you're making art. But what if you miss? What if you show some of yourself and everyone doesn't like it and it's cringy and it's vulnerable and there's crickets and you're standing there holding your artwork in a room full of people who are just walking past you? Like, what, that doesn't feel like it should be the scariest thing in the world, but it often is. And so I know screw it or fuck it can be a very like, it feels so thoughtless. It feels like screw it. It feels like what you say before you do something chaotic and impulsive. But the way I think of it, the way I see in my mind Dochi using it, and the way I see myself using it, and the way I would hope that other people might interpret this, is it's more of you've been making this, you've been working on this, and you're kind of psyching yourself out. You know, social media these days, especially when you're making art about things that are vulnerable, that are nuanced, and conversations that are very emotional, it is scary. You do risk your livelihood and your career and your reputation and your community when you make a statement that feels honest, but nobody else is talking about. You can't hide behind a trend. It's just you. You're there. You're saying something. And I think the idea that, you know, that I'm just going to do it anyways impulse might come from less of a thoughtless impulsive action and more of you're standing on the edge of a high dive and you know you want to jump in, but you're scared. And I do think that there's power in it. In fact, it's like one of those like, write fuck it on a sticky note and put it in your studio. And remember that there is no reward without a certain amount of risk, right? I think we all sort of begrudge what a riskless culture gives us with our creativity. We're all kind of groaning about all the sequels and, you know, nepotism babies. And I'm nothing against the actual people themselves, like who wouldn't take a career, you know, an easy route, easier route to a career if they had it handed to them. It's not the people I'm upset with or anything, but rather, like, of course, we're going to have a culture with AI, with sequels, with nepotism is the only way to get into an industry when we are adverse to taking risks. And so you owe it to yourself, I think, to try and make risks at least the best you can given your circumstances. I always would counter that and, of course, provide the caveat that not everyone can handle risk the same way because of inequalities in our society. So I trust you as a listener to be able to tell where that risk makes sense for you. But assuming that you've done that work and you know what the right thing is and it's jumping off the high dive and you're just scared, you know, fuck it, right? All right, 2 points left. The second to last thing that I learned from Dochi in this interview is make art for me, not necessarily art that represents me. So I think this is something that I would say is like a facet of our culture. Maybe this has always been the thing, but I guess I can only speak to what I know, and sort of my culture has always been largely influenced or even dominated by the internet. And so a lot of what feels like creative expression to us is sort of how we represent ourselves in our fashion choices and what we consume and fandoms that we're part of. And there's always this big question of like representing oneself, like how will people interpret me as a person? And I think this is what might feel like more of like a semantic or like a minor difference, but I actually think that when you make art from this different perspective, even if the outcome is similar, the mindset is way different. So the idea is instead of art that represents me, it's art for me. And literally, you know, so much of what I love about art is, you know, you remember when you were a kid and there was a big pile of crunchy leaves and you jumped into them just to feel the crunch, just to feel the sensation. You know, when we make art, the idea is that everyone who looks at it, who experiences it, who listens to it is enjoying this sensation, this, you know, aesthetic experience. You know, I'm going to call back to the book Your Brain on Art by Susan Maximum and Ivy Ross. It talks all about the neuroscience of it and all the benefits and how much it does affect us. But you have to make art for yourself first. You have to make art for your own sensation first. The sensation of dragging the brush across the canvas, the sensation of using the thicker medium and the inks and attaching paper and seeing your childhood photos on a big canvas and all the visceral human, you know, things that you might experience when you're making the artwork. And of course, you know, the experience of making art is that you make it for yourself, you're talking to a culture, and you have to take into account the viewer, right? Like, good art takes all those things into account. But I think if you're not making art first and foremost for yourself, you can get so caught up and bogged down on assuming what an audience will think, how the culture will take it, how will this be accepted by audience members, that it can really take away from your ability to make what's unique. And I think what's unique is going to be things that you want to experience. It's kind of art from the inside out, not the outside in, if that makes any sense. And so in the interview, when Dochi talks about the importance of making art for herself, Man, I could have probably maybe guessed at that moment that she may have read or done The Artist's Way, because that is a huge idea, is like, how do you go from sort of, especially I think as people who are women, is there's a lot of the way we navigate the world is very looking out and like meeting other people where they're at, you know, and we sometimes can ignore doing it for yourself and feeling it for yourself. And I just love the taking back power sensation of being intentional with who you're making the art for, right? And the last thing is about community, right? So much of this is very like, do it for you, do it for you, do it for you. And I think a lot of what Doechii is trying to say is like, we sometimes get the order wrong. We make art for other people and then we try to do it in a silo, when in reality, the art making has to be very, you have to answer yourself. You have to hold yourself to your own integrity. You have to like it for yourself. And that's a lot of what I've been going through with all of these points. But the last point is to have someone who is next to you who will remind you of you, who you are. The act of making art, especially when you're making it in the way that Doechii is talking about, this artist way, sort of focusing on looking inward. The best metaphor I can give for this sensation is, you know, when you learn about butterflies or moths, and they go from like little eggs to little grubs, caterpillars, whatever, and they go up into a chrysalis and they literally turn into goo, right? It's not just that they are a caterpillar and then they start growing wings. Their whole body kind of liquefies when it's in the chrysalis, and then it sort of reforms as a butterfly. Like, it is, it's not like, you know, maybe that's standard knowledge for everyone else. Kind of broke my mind when I learned about this. Unfortunately, I was way too old. But you completely fall apart. Like, if you cut open a chrysalis halfway through, you would just get a pool of goo, which is crazy to me. And I think in that same way, the practice of deep art making requires you to at various points turn yourself into goo. There's so much like looking inward and synthesizing, and how do I feel, and how does this make me feel, and how do I respond to this? And what are some literature pieces that are inspiring this, and mantras and quotes, and, you know, you're in a mindset that is not very good at navigating the world, but really good at creating art. That if you don't have people around you when you're kind of in this goo state, you know, hearing the wrong thing, getting the wrong kind of criticism, having a bout of artist block, not feeling inspired, kind of losing your footing, which is, by the way, all incredibly normal, part of the process, some more than others, sure, of course, but it is part of it, right? You have ups and downs. You have moments where you feel like you're doing it all right, and you have other moments where you question everything and you don't know if what you're doing is right. But I think the importance of having people in your life who can see you for who you are, who can look at you when you're in the chrysalis goo state and go, no, you're Doechii, or no, you're Sari, and you're this and you're that, and you're, you know, committed to this, and you're authentic in this way, and this is who you are. You know, it's, I think, important. And we have a very individualistic culture where, again, on one hand, I think we do emphasize and prioritize a looking out, of being aware of what's going on, but also we sort of underplay the importance of community in art making. You know, I can remember whenever I was in, I don't know, middle school or something, and learning about when we went from sort of hunter-gatherers to living in these agrarian societies. And one of the great growths or benefits from this was all of a sudden we were able to have an artisan class. And it was in the very beginning of humanity, it was important to us that we had dedicated people who made art, who decorated pots, who did murals, who wove things, who were completely dedicated to art making. And it wouldn't have been possible if everyone wasn't working in a way, collecting corn, grinding up, you know, whatever, the day-to-day of society, so that those artists could spend their day doing something that was pretty superficial. I hate to use that word, but like, not incredibly vital to survival, but vital enough to humanity that everyone said, I'll give you a little bit of my bread, my corn, my produce, my berries, and you keep making the art. And so art was always meant to happen in community with others, in communication. And I think the most important thing you can do as an artist is try to make sure you have people around you who can remind you when you lose your footing of who you are. I can't recommend enough going and looking at that Rolling Stone interview. Have it on in the background while you're painting. But I also wanted to just encourage you. I think it's so helpful to see artists who are having a moment, right? And you have ups and downs, and it comes and it goes. And it reminds me, I think I've mentioned this before on this podcast, but one of my favorite things to do when I lose footing or I struggle, or, you know, for me, I really have a motivation lull in like February and March sometimes, maybe early January. It's just a seasonal thing. It's probably just purely vitamin D, guys. But anyways, is there is a channel on YouTube called Louisiana Channel, and it's interviews with older artists, and they talk about their career and looking backwards. And one of the things I'll do is I'll visit that channel and listen to an interview. And it's always very life-giving, because artists who are kind of in that final chapter of their life can look back, and the things that felt so important and make or break and life and death kind of recede, and the things that kind of you overlook as like the everyday work of being an artist were actually quite a bit more profound. And I think that focus can be really helpful. It's in a way, that's part of my having people around you who can remind you to who you are. You know, I also have kids who keep me, you know, aware of who I am and my utility. And then I have good friends who do that too. And my partner and I bond over art and writing and books and literature and the world and everything like that. So anyways, I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Let me know if you have any thoughts. I always like to hear y'all's response after these podcasts, because they can feel a little bit like talking into the void, if I can be completely honest. And let me know if there's other things you want to hear for this season. I have lots of videos, podcasts already planned. So excited to get those out. But I'll talk to you guys next week. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you for being here. I wanted to also encourage you guys to leave a review. The feedback is incredibly helpful, and if you leave a review, I will read your handle or your name on the following week's episode. Again, thank you so much. Take care, y'all, and happy creating.